Monday. How you doing? It's Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Hope you've had a good weekend. Have you had? You can let me know on Twitter. It's at BBG Richie. Monday's programme about to begin. Going to do a phone-in in the second hour of the show. Before that, former professional footballer Gary Dempsey will be on the programme. You don't want to miss him. Busy old day, busy old show. Welcome to it.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been laying out the roadmap for the easing of restrictions and the ultimate ending of lockdowns. Irreversible, apparently. I'll talk to you about that in a moment. Lots to get through. richieallen.co.uk. Lots of articles on there today. Do stay in touch with the website. It's Monday's programme. The beginning of what I have no doubt will be a very busy week. And I've had, despite the difficulty of last week, a relatively peaceful weekend. Thanks for asking me, by the way. UK Prime Minister then, Boris Johnson, has laid out the roadmap. I won't burden you with the audio of the stuttering, buffering buffoon speaking about such things. I'll give you the lowdown, if you like. I'll give you the lowdown. From the 8th of March, schools will reopen and two people will be allowed to meet outdoors for a chat. I know. From March 29th, outdoor gatherings of six people or two households will be allowed. And also from 29th of March, also, football, golf and tennis can resume. April 12th, we'll see shops, hairdressers, gyms and outdoor hospitality reopening. Also from April 12th, the pubs will be able to open and restaurants, but only serving outdoors. Zoos and theme parks will open from April 12th as well. Step three, beginning on May 17th, step three, most social contact rules will be lifted, as well as limited mixing indoors. From the 17th of May, you'll be allowed to mix indoors. I know. And Johnson said today that he hopes that step four, from June 21st, would see the end of all legal limits on social contact. That's about the gist of it. Johnson will hold a televised press conference at 7 o'clock GMT this evening. Now, just briefly on Gary Dempsey, very good career, Gary. Very well-liked footballer. Everton, Aberdeen, Dunfermline, Shelburne and Waterford, to name some of the clubs he played for. Had a great spell at Waterford back in the 2001-2002 season. I know he came back again a bit later on. Very good footballer. Runs a gym now, does Gary. And he posted this to Twitter over the weekend. Now, I'm giving you a language warning. If you do have a wee one in the room and you don't want your wee one to hear any bad language, you need to turn this down now for about 2 minutes. All right. Here's Gary Dempsey. This was posted from his gym after a workout over the weekend. And on various platforms now, this has been seen by more than 2 million people. All right.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. Lent with Demps continues. Just done my 5K. But I'm hurting today, guys. I'm really, really hurting today. I just want to ask. I want to ask the Irish government. What about us? Huh? When do we matter? What about 95% of the population that this virus doesn't affect? Huh? Do we not matter, no? What about our kids? What about small businesses that are going to be closed now? If we go to the 1st of May, are going to be closed for 12, 14 months. Huh? What about us? I am fucking sick of it now. I'm absolutely sick of it. How do they expect us to survive? To pay our mortgage? To pay our fucking rates on our business? $7,000. $7,000 and €203 a week. That's what I got off the government for being closed for 14 months if we go to May the 1st. Huh? Do we not matter? Does my son not matter? 13 years of age, in his fucking bedroom, 3-4 hours a day doing homeschooling, can't go and meet his mates for a kickabout on the pitch, can't go for a game of golf, can't cycle past 5K. Does he not matter, no? Or my daughter, who does used to do gymnastics 4 or 5 times a week, 11 years of age, who now is a shadow of her former self. She doesn't matter, does she not? 95% and 98% survival rate for this fucking virus. And you're destroying the country and destroying the fucking people. Micheál Martin, Leo Varadkar, you should be fucking ashamed of yourselves. I don't know where we go from here. I don't know what the answer, but lockdowns are not fucking working. They're not working. Clearly they're not working. So open up the country and give us a fucking chance. Let us try and survive, man. The messages I'm getting on Twitter from people, young people who are telling me they can't do it, they can't do another 9 weeks. Do they not matter? Do they not matter at all to anybody in this country? Old people. I had a client tell me his dad and his mum and dad are setting the alarm clock to stay in the bed longer so they don't have to be awake for as long during the day. It's fucking bollocks and I'm sick of it.
Gary Dempsey there, former professional footballer, massive support for that, and no doubt those sentiments echoed by and felt by many men and women in Ireland and beyond. We'll talk to Gary about that this hour. He won't be happy to hear this, Gary. Claire Byrne is a presenter for RTE Radio, and this morning she had Dr. Tomás Ryan on. Now, Tomás Ryan is a neuroscientist based at Trinity College Dublin. This is what he had to say. This guy incredibly favours a zero COVID approach, which, well, just listen.
Our view at the Independent Scientific Advocacy Group is that we should be aiming to get to zero community transmission under 10 cases a day. And the issue is that, of course, the lockdown is that we're in is already very long. And we've heard from the Taoiseach that will likely be in level 5 restrictions until the end of April. Now, obviously, that's a very depressing scenario under many, from many perspectives. But the optimistic way of approaching this is that this gives us the opportunity to properly stamp out COVID-19 in Ireland. And at the same time, put in place mandatory travel quarantine so that we can stop it coming into the country after that. So I think that the discussion needs to move partly towards how do we accelerate the current lockdown. And by accelerating, Claire, I don't mean leaving it earlier, when can we open up, but by pushing the numbers down faster so that we can then open up sooner.
So
by accelerating the lockdown, he means making it tougher, making it harder, prolonging it. Do you think the presenter gets stuck into him and hammers him? Do you think so?
Up sooner.
So making it tougher.
Not necessarily tougher. When you say, let's make this lockdown tougher, that sounds very harrowing to a lot of people, because for a very large part of the population today, the lockdown can't be tougher.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working from home, if you've got your kids at home, if you're only going out once a day, your lockdown can't be tougher. But there's a lot of people, including in the public sector, who are still going into the office and or whose employers are insisting that they go into the office. There's a lot of traffic. Everyone knows this. This is not like the first lockdown. We could be using mass antigen testing. That needs to be brought on board. We do need to be serial testing people in more high-risk environments, not just anyone that is working in a crowded environment. Under these conditions, we should be doing serial testing. We should have ring vaccination priorities for them.
Ring-backed vaccination priorities. Wow. That was Tomás Ryan, neuroscientist from Trinity College Dublin, zero COVID approach. We should accelerate lockdown, basically. Yeah. The UK is becoming a police state, or has become a police state, is a police state. Listen to Stella, a 50-something woman who phoned in Mark Dolan's talk radio programme last night. She was out jogging with a couple of mates. 50-something woman now, out jogging with a couple of mates, and she bumped into the old Bill.
Myself and a couple of friends, we go out jogging all the time.
Yeah.
You know, either early in the morning or kind of tea time. Because, you know, what's happening, we can't go to the gyms, we can't swim, we can't play tennis, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
And we're jogging past McDonald's, literally past McDonald's drive-in, and the police stopped us and said, "What are you doing?" But it was quite obvious what we were doing.
Wow.
And they fined us.
You are joking.
No, they stopped us and they gave us the biggest lecture in the history of the world about, don't you care about other people? And have you no thought for other people? And people are dying. And we're like, we're running. We just stood there like absolute numpties. We didn't say anything at all. We just stood there and took it all. And then when the police left, we just said, why didn't we say something? Why didn't we say something? But no, we just accepted it because we're so damn dumb.
I don't think she's dumb. But the question, why did we accept it? Why did we stand there? Why didn't we say anything? It's a very pertinent question. Why indeed? Why? Why do so many assume that the police officer has authority over them? Why don't enough people tell the police officer politely to go about his or her business and mind your business? None of your business what I'm doing. I'm out here jogging in the open air. And yet they accepted the fine. They took the fine and walked away. A lot of stories like that around today, by the way, in the UK. Tabloids, that was talk radio there. Did you hear about the nocebo? Have you heard about it? You might have heard about it. You might have read the term or heard of the term when the statins debate was raging a few years ago. Well, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, writing in the Telegraph today, this is a guy who wants us to believe he's a journalist. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard claimed today in the Telegraph that hundreds of German health workers, doctors and nurses, and separately hundreds even of ambulance drivers from another part of Germany, who all reported being ill after they had their vaccine. They were imagining it, according to Ambrose Evans-Pritchard. He says they were imagining it. Now, this is hundreds of people, hundreds at different points, different places in Germany, who have said, health workers have said, I have become ill or very ill upon receiving my vaccine. And Pritchard says they were primed now by fake news, essentially hypnotised by exposure to fake news, so that when they had their perfectly safe vaccine, according to him, they incorrectly believed that they were ill because they had been preconditioned into believing that they would become ill. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard. This is an extraordinary development, this. The idea that exposure to fake news about the vaccine before you get the vaccine can lead you later on to believe that the dose has done you some harm when, in fact, it hasn't done you any harm. And he even documented in the article the exact locations of these adverse events. You have a hospital in Braunschweig where 37 out of 88 staff became ill after having the jab. And of about 300 ambulance drivers in Dortmund, I think about a quarter of them said they had had a very bad reaction to the vaccine. But according to Pritchard, well, it's fake news. He said in the article, that is probably what has been happening with AstraZeneca in Germany, where fake news has run rampant to the point of mass hysteria. What an astonishing thing to say, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, in the Telegraph today. Alrighty, let's move on. I might be having one or two sound problems, or you might be experiencing one or two sound problems momentarily. If you are, bear with me, my apologies. I'll get it sorted in a moment. It's coming up for 5:15. Let's move swiftly on. That article is on richieallen.co.uk today, by the way. And Sunday Times columnist David Quinn tweeted last night that martial law may be needed in Ireland to achieve so-called zero COVID. Quinn said, watching, this is a direct quotation now, watching the very large numbers out and about and hearing anecdotal evidence of people starting to meet again in each other's houses, I see no way short of martial law of us achieving zero COVID. That's a journalist suggesting that a military government might need to be imposed in Ireland and the law might need to be suspended to keep people confined to their homes. That's what's happening in Ireland. Okay? Speaking of the lifting of restrictions, before the announcement by Boris Johnson this afternoon, earlier today, the columnist Peter Hitchens, most often read these days on the Daily or in the Daily Mail or the Mail Online. Hitchens was speaking with Talk Radio's Mike Graham and expressing his concern that we might not get back all of the freedoms that were so readily given up to protect us from the virus, Peter Hitchens.
I wouldn't say exactly that we live in a police state. I'd say we live in a country where we have sacrificed quite a lot of our freedoms, and I think a lot of them are not coming back. Mm. I think, for instance, imagine, here's something which must concern quite a few people. What will be happening if weddings begin again? I suspect, for instance, that if guests are allowed in any numbers, they'll almost certainly have to be registered. There'll be checking of their phones and apps to make sure that every detail of their presence. Everything that used to be something which one just did is going to become something which one has to register, record, and will be in some ways the property and at the permission of the state. Instead of assuming that we can do what we like, we've now been changed into people who have to ask permission for everything that we do.
Yes.
We're all now reduced to this state of doggy begging, where we're saying, "Oh, please, please, Mr. Johnson, will you let us go out?
Yes.
Will you let someone in the park? Can I actually go and see my relatives without wearing a spacesuit? Will I be able to go abroad? Please, please, let me." Well, this is no attitude for free man.
No,
free woman.
No, quite. And it's actually, it's characterised, Peter, isn't it, by the questions that...
You establish your reason for doing it. And to say, let's see what actually happens here. I think there's still quite a strong faction among the government's advisors of the zero COVID mob who actually think that restrictions probably have to last forever. I don't think that faction has by any means gone away.
No.
And in any area where we're subjected to tests, if you remember, when Gordon Brown announced that we're going to be however many tests it was before we joined the Euro...
Yeah.
It became clear later on that meant we weren't going to join the Euro, because the crucial thing about tests is who decides when they've been passed.
Mm. Yes.
Well, who will decide when these tests have been passed? So I'll welcome any liberations which come my way, but I'm not actually completely convinced yet that we're going to be as free as we used to be, or even particularly free by the standards of today after the announcements this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, as it happens, Johnson announced that the easing of restrictions would take place in four stages, with the final one on the 21st of June seeing social contact limits being basically done away with, that they will do away with social contact limits in England from the 21st of June. But that's if the data goes the way they hope, if hospitalizations are reduced and all of that jazz. Boris Johnson speaking from Parliament this afternoon. He will address the UK, the country at large, from about 7 p.m. this evening. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, here in the northwest of the UK. The time is coming up now for 18 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. Gary Dempsey will be with me right soon. Later on today, I'll be taking your calls. That's in the second hour. The phone details are on my website now, richieallen.co.uk. There's an article there with the phone details, but you can find them as well on facebook.com. Go to facebook.com/TheRichieAllenShow. All righty, let's move on rather swiftly. Don't know if you saw this, did you? Oh, yes, of course, one of the measures. Now, this is important. So Johnson said that schools will open for March the 8th, but, and I did write an article about this last Thursday, but I've not been with you in a news capacity since then. One of the things Johnson wants to happen is he wants secondary school students and college students to be to take two tests a week. So if you're in secondary school, you're most likely going to be living at home with mum and dad, or mum and mum, or God knows what these days, right? And your parents will be expected to administer two rapid lateral flow tests to you, the student, throughout term time. I wrote about that on richieallen.co.uk last week. More on that, no doubt, to come in the coming days. Disney has added a content warning to the beginning of Muppet Show episodes. Historical Muppet Show episodes. Content warning. Disney began streaming the old episodes of The Muppets on Friday last. Disney's statement reads, "This program includes negative depictions and or mistreatment of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and they are wrong now." The disclaimer was added to each of the episodes for different reasons, including one where Johnny Cash, the man in black, sings alongside Muppets, sings in front of the Confederate flag. Of course, the Confederacy was a group of southern states that fought to keep slavery. It wanted to keep slavery during the US Civil War. The flag is seen as a symbol of racism by many people. Disney said, rather than remove this content, we want to acknowledge its harmful impact, learn from it, and spark conversation to create a more inclusive future together. More inclusive future together. Taken to its logical conclusion, eventually you will have disclaimers on, I don't know, Disney will put a disclaimer on Peter Pan. Why? Well, it might be offensive or it might be triggering to amputees. It might be triggering or offensive to amputees. Why? Well, because Captain Hook, not Cook. That's right. Captain Hook isn't a good guy. He's a bad guy. Amputees might say it reflects negatively on them. Because we wouldn't know. We would imagine if we watched Peter Pan, we would imagine that anybody that's only got one hand is a bit of a bastard. Yes. This isn't funny. And Alan Carr, this made me laugh today. This is a bit of a Twitter storm today. Alan Carr is a comedian. I don't know too much about him other than he's a comedian and he fronts television programmes on Channel 4 and Sky. And today he took over from Radio 2's breakfast DJ, Zoe Ball, who's away on a holiday for a week. Socially distanced holiday or maybe a domestic holiday. I have no idea. But she's off for a week. They brought in Alan Carr. Some people don't like Alan Carr because he's a bit camp, apparently. And one or two people, well, they tweeted the BBC to say, oh, no, not Alan Carr. Apparently that's homophobic now. Somebody tweeted, I'm sure Alan Carr is a lovely bloke, but that is not a voice I want to ease me from sleep into work mode first thing in the morning. Some people said it's homophobic. You can't criticise somebody now if they're gay. You can't say he's a bit of a shite radio presenter. That's homophobic. I don't know if he's any good or not, to be honest. I have heard him on BBC Radio 2 with Melanie Sykes once, and he is a bit camp. Calling somebody camp and saying that you don't want to listen to somebody who's camp, is that homophobic? Well, if that's true, my mentor, rest in peace, Billy McCarthy, great man, gay man. Well, he was homophobic because he didn't like camp gay people either. Screaming queens, he called them. I don't know, 23 minutes past the hour. And as far as these irreversible, this term irreversible has been bandied around today. Johnson has said, and his vaccine minister Nadeem Zahawi has said, that they want to ease these restrictions and eventually get out of lockdown and make it irreversible. In other words, no return to these measures or to lockdowns. Right, okay. But Professor Andrew Hayward, University College London, Institute of Epidemiology, he's not happy. He was on the BBC this afternoon and he doesn't think that irreversible even is a helpful term. Because what if we have to go into lockdown again? We might have to, with new variants in the future or new diseases. Andrew Hayward on Simon McCoy's BBC News programme.
Well, I think that's right, and that's why I'm always a little bit cautious about terms like, you know, make this irreversible or that this needs to be the last ever lockdown, because I think we always need to be in a position where we can respond to things not being as we expect, and particularly with new variants, then we do need to not cast in stone the fact that we're never going to take severe action again, because we never know exactly what's on the cards. And I think the more that you have language that ties you into that, the harder it is to make the decisions that you need to make in a timely way. Hopefully we won't need to make them.
Yeah.
But maybe we will.
Maybe we will, he said. Now, just before Johnson made his statement to Westminster today, Patrick Vallance, the country's chief scientific advisor, he released a statement. He wasn't interviewed, so I don't have the audio, but he released a statement, which I think was signed by some of the other members of SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. Vallance said, basically in no uncertain terms, that scientists think that releasing lockdown measures and restrictions altogether or doing so in a quick fashion is going to be dangerous. It's obvious that Johnson, or at least it's being made clear to you and me, it's obvious that the SAGE committee, which has basically controlled the government's response to this virus, whatever it is, that committee is not, hasn't approved or doesn't approve of the measures that Boris Johnson has proposed taking in the coming weeks. Indeed. At BBG Richie, in the second hour, I will be taking your phone calls. Looking forward to that. It's only an hour, so we'll get through as many as we can. If you don't know the contact details by now, they can be found on my Facebook page, which is very simply facebook.com/Richie Allen Show. There's no the. I gave you the incorrect information earlier. It's facebook.com/Richie Allen Show. facebook.com/Richie Allen Show. You'll see the meme there with the numbers. I've also posted that information to my website, richieallen.co.uk. It's Monday's programme. It is the BBG, not the BBC, live from Salford in the northwest of the UK. Busy week ahead, I think. Gary Dempsey, former professional footballer, really good guy, I believe. I think he's a great guy, in fact. Went viral over the weekend with a video he posted talking about the devastating impact of lockdown. He joins me in a couple of minutes' time after this. Norman Greenbaum, man, spirit in the sky on the Richie Allen radio show, is coming up for 5:30. Phone in an hour or two, remember. Looking forward to taking your calls. Not going to give you the numbers. They're on, as I said, the Facebook page, they're on Twitter, and they're on the website, richieallen.co.uk. Gary Dempsey is standing by, will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. Thanks for your tweets. Keep them coming in. It's at BBGRichie on Twitter, at BBGRichie on Twitter. Andy says, of course we know the cabal uses reverse symbolism. No more lockdowns means more lockdowns. No more lockdowns, he says, means more lockdowns, etc., etc. Reverse symbolism. David says, what Valance meant was my boss Billy might want to make a lot more moolah in the future. Maybe. And somebody called Rumended on Twitter says, Richie, I love the Medics tune after the so-called Medics views on lockdowns. Says Rumended. Yeah, there is a Doctor and the Medics version of Spirit in the Sky, which is a big hit for them in 1986. David tweets, Richie, afternoon. I was at work today laying the old bricks, playing your Sunday Melody show. Went down a storm with the other brickies. Thanks, David. I'm big amongst brickies then. That's good to know. I appreciate that. Hi to Chris. Hi to Diane. Hi to Laurie. Disney. Dear Disney, says Laurie, you're all weirdos. That's happening everywhere, that. Anybody who subscribes, whether it's to box sets, the BBC and ITV have got a joint thing and its name escapes me, but it doesn't matter, where you can subscribe, pay a fee and subscribe and watch old BBC and old ITV box sets. And I understand increasingly trigger warnings or just warnings are being placed on television shows from the 70s and 80s. Strange times we live in. But we do get accused, people like you and people like me, of making too much of this. But I don't think we make enough of it, to be honest. I really don't. The implications of it, you know. It's the implications. That's what you need to be thinking about. Let's give Gary a shout. Then he's standing by. Do keep those tweets coming in at BBG Richie on Twitter. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show. 28 minutes to 6 o'clock, live from Salford. Let's welcome to the programme. I mentioned him at the top of the show. I played the audio. I won't do it again. Compelling stuff from Gary Dempsey. Very well-liked footballer who's played at Everton, at Aberdeen, at Dunfermline, Shelburne, and, of course, Waterford. Wexford lad originally, runs a gym now. Let's welcome to the show Gary Dempsey. Gary, thanks for giving us your time, mate. How are you?
Hi, Richie. How are you? A small bit of a whirlwind the last few days.
I can only imagine, yeah. By my understanding, across several platforms, your video, which is very emotional, obviously very spur of the moment and heartfelt, it's been seen by at least a couple of million people by now, so you're getting contacted from all over the place. I understand you've done some Irish media today, Gary. What was the reaction?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Look, not everybody's going to agree with what I said in the video, and that's fine, you know. I would say 90% of the reaction has been absolutely fantastic, and the support. And like I said, 90% of the people are more or less saying, I've literally took the words right out of their mouths, and that's exactly how they feel at the minute with the current situation. So that wasn't surprising, to be honest, because obviously speaking to friends and family, they're all in the same boat. So the reaction's been great. None of the big guys have been in touch, which is not surprising. But yeah, look, it is what it is. And I done Southeast Radio this morning. I spoke to Alan down there. It was fine. I don't know what sort of reaction or feedback he got, but at least the word is getting out there now that sort of there's going to be a bit of resistance soon if they're not careful, you know.
Good, Gary. And I certainly don't want to sound like I'm criticising my old parish, WLRFM in Waterford. You know, I enjoyed my time at WLR. But has anybody been in touch? I mean, you had a couple of brilliant seasons with the Blues. Obviously, 2001, 2002, you were very popular there. You still got a lot of mates there. Has WLR been in touch with you?
Yeah, Matt Keane was on to me. Matt rang me at about 20 past 10 on Sunday night.
Did he?
Hell, Matt, he wouldn't be the best with the old time. But he rang and said, look, that one of the lads be in touch about going on. So I'd imagine I'd be on with them at some stage as well during the week. But,
good, mate. Good. Now, yeah, tell us about the frame of mind, because after having a very good football career and retiring, you've got your own business, you've got a gym, and you just done a workout. What sort of frame of mind were you in when you made the video? And tell us about the impact the lockdown and the restrictions have had on your business.
Well, I tell you, it was bubbling anyway, Richie. It's been bubbling away ever since, really, sort of the second lockdown, really. But I had been on the treadmill. I was down in the gym and I was doing a bit of training, and I come down to, because it's my own gym, it's grand, I can come down. So I'm lucky in that respect. But so I came down, I was on the treadmill, I was having a plod. I made a promise to myself in Lent that I would run 5K every day on the treadmill. So I happened to be on the treadmill and I was listening to some YouTube motivational videos and sort of, I was ready to run through the wall, and I got off the treadmill and sort of, right, this is it, picked up the phone and just let it all out, you know, in the three or four different videos that I'd done. In terms of how it's impacted my business, well, if we go to April like they're talking about for gyms, that'll be us closed pretty much 12 months out of the last 14, which you could imagine is absolutely horrendous. We bought our facility is an old secondary school here in Wicklow, and we bought it and we've developed it, and we didn't go mad doing it all at once. We sort of built it up and built it up and built it up. But we've got a massive mortgage, a mortgage of sort of $2,500 a month that we've got to cover on this place. Now we've had, I have to say, my members were fantastic in lockdown one, because it was new to everybody. Nobody knew what was happening. The weather was nice. And so everybody sort of kept their memberships and everybody does some stuff with us online. Lockdown two, we lost a few, but lockdown three, people, and rightly so, you can't expect them to keep paying their membership when the facility is closed. So we lost a lot of our membership. So we've no money coming in, but yet I'm still expected to pay the mortgage on the place. I'm still expected to pay rates on the place. Obviously, that was my income as well. So I've got to pay the mortgage on my house. So we've gone from having a really, really successful business to getting €203 a week from the pandemic payment. Now, I don't want any grants. I don't want any handouts. I just want to go back to work.
Yeah.
We got $7,000. We got a lump sum of $7,000 back off the government for rates that we had paid last year, which helped a little bit, you know, covered a couple of loans. Obviously, we spoke to the bank and got loans deferred and stuff like that. But I think there's a bigger picture here going on in the country, to be honest with you, Richie, because it's not about me and my business. It's about the whole population. The big one for me would be the kids. The impact that's happening, that it's having on the kids, it's just colossal. And I think the collateral damage down the road from this is going to far outweigh what we're seeing now in terms of COVID, to be honest with you.
And you talked in the video about your own son and
yes,
the impact it's having on him. And I know you have a daughter as well. I've heard a lot of this from listeners emailing me saying that their children have kind of gone into themselves. And I don't want to be, we don't have children, my missus and I, sadly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm certainly no parenting expert. But give us a flavour, give us an idea, Gary, of what you've seen, the changes you've seen in your own children in the last year.
Well, I think the biggest problem we had with this one has been it's the winter. So it's dark, cold, wet nights.
We just lost Gary momentarily. Let's see if we can get him back there.
But is up.
We just lost you momentarily, Gary. We just lost you momentarily. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect to Gary. it sometimes kicks the gremlins out of the system. It's an old school trick, that.
Am I back?
Ah, you're back. You know, it's the greatest old school trick in the world, Gary. Just disconnect and reconnect.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think my Louise is trying to ring me. That's what's wrong.
Go ahead, anyway.
Jack has to be online at 8:45 to do a Zoom, first of his Zoom classes. So he'll jump on and do his couple of Zoom classes. He gets a 20-minute break where he'll come down and get a little snack. He'll go back up. He'll do another couple of Zoom classes, come back down, get a snack, and sort of be finished up at 3:30, whatever it is. But, I mean, it's just like Jack would have been training 3-4 times a week with the football. He would have been out a couple of nights with the ga. I would have been out on the we go cycling on the road bikes. I would have been out with him. We would have been out golfing. But like he's just now, he's just constantly in his bedroom. Now that the evenings have got a bit longer and a bit brighter, we're getting out and doing a bit more. But I mean, the social side of it, not being able to see his friends, like he's afraid to go down and kick the ball down the road with the pitch with the lads in case the guards arrive and give out to them. You know, like it's just. And then Lucy more so than Jack has gone into her shell a little bit because Lucy would have been doing gymnastics 5 nights a week. She's on the trampoline squad up here. She's very, very good at it. And that's just been snatched away from her. She's not doing any classes on Zoom. We have to do all the homeschooling with her, and she gets frustrated then because Lucy's the two of them are in the Gael school, so they speak fluent Irish, and of course me and Louise don't speak fluent Irish,
right?
So we're using Google Translate to try and do the homework, and you know, like, so it's just a mess.
Let me explain that to our listeners. Gary's children. Well, Lucy goes to Gael school. That's the Irish language. So she would learn, all of her lessons would be done in Gaelge, in the Irish language. My Irish is as good as yours, by the way, Gary, shamefully.
Yeah, yeah.
But that obviously presents a bit of a problem. And this is really, I've used the term vaudeville a lot through the last year. It's almost like Benny Hill stuff, this. There's you and the missus trying to use Google Translate to try and help Lucy with her homework. I mean, it's wow, I can't get over this, really. And she can't do the gymnastics during the week like she wants to do. So you've noticed then that this is affecting her. She's more, how would you say, is she depressed, morose, a bit melancholy?
She had trouble sleeping. We actually had to get her lockdown too. She was having awful trouble sleeping. So we had to actually get the doctor to give us a little bit of melatonin just to help her doze off. But yeah, just got into it, you know, just not out in it. Like, she's not happy. She'd be like me. She'd be happy-go-lucky. She'd be out all the time. She'd be, as I say, she'd be out the 4 or 5 nights a week doing the gymnastics and the trampolining. Because of the weather now over the winter, we have a trampoline in the garden. That hasn't got any use because of the weather, obviously. So, that's my two. Now, you multiply that by whatever there is in the country. You know, it's colossal amount of damage being done to them, you know.
I can't imagine
it's
it.
Sad.
I can't imagine it, really. And you made reference several times in your video, powerfully, and I'm not kissing your backside, it was a powerful video you made. Often when you don't think about it, Gary, it's the best thing, isn't it? When you just say what's on your mind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you talked about, what about me? What about my son? What about my daughter? And this is the central thing that I keep coming back to with guests on this programme. The virus, as you point out, is harmless for the great, great majority of people. I did a bit of homework before you came on today, and I wrote an article for my website this morning. Depending on who you believe, whether it's the Irish Times or whether it's the Independent, the average age of somebody dying with the virus in our country is between 83 and 86, and they generally have very serious comorbidities. It's not that we say, ah, to hell with them then, that's tough luck on them, but it's insane to tell healthy people that you must put your own well-being in serious harm to protect people that are coming to the end of their lives anyway, and that maybe we could have done a better job of helping, because that's another story entirely, letting old people in care homes and sending people from hospitals into care homes, which is a terrible thing. But you made a good point, Gary. And you know, the people you're talking to, is this one of the things that's coming up? I mean, the fact that this 95%, 98% of the people in the country are not going to have more than a tickle in their throat or a cough or a cold. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah, look, I guess that the first one, right? The first one, I'll give them the first one because it was new. We didn't know what it was, and it came in and I was like, holy God, what's this that's sort of making everybody sick? I get that, and that's fine. Now that we know what it is, now that we know who it affects most, there has to be a better plan, because like I've had so many rows on Twitter since Friday night. I had one guy messaging me saying that, look, you know, can you not tell your followers to stay with it for another couple of months? We're nearly there, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, well, why though? And he said, well, my missus has asthma. And I said, well, hang on a minute. I said, so your missus has asthma, so you want my son not to go play football because your missus has asthma?
Yeah.
Now, who's the selfish one there? So surely his missus, in my eyes, in my opinion, his missus should be staying in the house and isolating, and the rest of us get on with it. I mean, it's not rocket science. And I understand we have to protect the old. Of course we have to protect the old people. And of course we have to protect the hospitals. But I know nurses. I've got nurses that train in my gym. They were never under the pressure that the government was saying they were under. The hospitals were busy. But Rizzy, for as long as I can remember, I don't know if you go back 2 or 3 years, every winter, front page of the Sun and the Daily Mirror and the Star, people on trolleys, people dying on trolleys, there's not enough beds, and yada, yada, yada. This has been going on for years.
Yeah.
And they never done anything to fix it.
And I think, I think Ireland has a similar issue to the UK in terms of there's been a decrease in the numbers of nurses and doctors in the health service over the years. I mean, in the UK, it's halved in 30 yeah. years. So when... You know, you make a very good point. Every winter we get the same stories, you know, health service at the brink of collapse, while at the same yeah. time they've got less staff to deal yep. with these cases. I wonder if it's the same in Ireland. I think it's not as bad as the UK, but I think there has been a decrease in staff levels. And can I ask you this? And I'm not trying to get you into trouble now, so you don't have to answer this. But I'm sure you did your homework on this programme before you came on it. But so I'll ask you, but you don't have to answer it. If... I mean, I was listening on the programme before you came on. We heard we heard a soundbite from a Trinity College Dublin professor epidemiology, and he yes. wants zero COVID. He wants these lockdowns to go on, basically, and on and on and on and on. And I don't believe that these guys don't know what you know and what I know, that this is madness. Yeah. So. What really is going on? And again, if you don't want to get into
Look, 100. I think there's other things at play here. I think and what those other things are, I'd rather not go into. But I don't think this is. I don't think they're telling us the whole truth. And I think now what's happened is they've gone so far down the rabbit hole now that they're stuck in the headlights and they don't know what to do. And their answer is right: lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. I mean, these people that are coming out and saying zero COVID, again, it's like, I don't know if you've seen the second or the third video that I've done. These guys aren't affected.
Yeah.
These guys, like the politicians, are still getting full salaries. They're still getting to go to work every day. Their kids are probably getting privately schooled. Do you know, it doesn't affect them at all. At all. They've got no skin in the game. So therefore, they can say, oh, sure, we'll be locked down for another 9 weeks, lads. We'll be grand. It's not. And Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar will come on the news tomorrow night when they're making the announcement, and they'll say, look, you've done amazing, but we're nearly there. We need to stick together. We're all in it together. But the fact of the matter is, Richie, we're not all in it together anymore. We're not. We're far from it, because these guys get to go to work. These guys, these professors, Luke O'Neill and all these guys that are coming out and saying that zero COVID and the masks and the this and the that and the other, do you know, they might have a hidden agenda. I believe Luke O'Neill might have shares in one of the vaccine companies and stuff like that. So, but they haven't got skin in the game. And that's what annoys the shite. It just really, yeah. really bugs me when they stand up and say, we're all in it together. Okay, Micheál, why don't you go home and sit in your office, in your house for the next 9 weeks and take €203 and then come back to me and tell me we're all in
that
it together.
That's a good idea. Let me read a couple of tweets. Gary Dempsey is our guest, and football fans will know who Gary is. Former professional footballer, great career. Waterford people, of course, will know Gary very well, but he was at Everton, he was at Dunfermline, he was at Aberdeen, of course, another great club. Gary put a video out over the weekend. It's gone viral, millions of people seeing it, about his own frustration with lockdown in terms of what it's doing to his children, what it's doing to the mental health of other children, and of course financially what it means for people. Lots and lots of tweets on this, unsurprisingly, at BBG Richie, and you'll find Gary very quickly, by the way, on Twitter as well. I'll tweet Gary again, so give him a follow there. It's at DEMPZ 8 at DEMP Demp Z8, Gary Dempsey. Proley says, Richie, my eldest got the manager's player of the season back in 2018-2019. Cracking football player is my son. These days he's online most of the day and he hasn't kicked a ball now in over a year. Jesus, that's, it's terrible to read that. I mean, I was a terrible player, but I loved it. I went out and played anyway, as bad as it was. William asked about vaccines. I won't get into vaccines with Gary. I will ask him about the business because they might impose upon businesses like Gary's that they might need to be getting vaccine passports. I'll ask you that in a minute. Again, you might not want to get into that, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Patricia is in Zurich, a friend of ours. Patricia says, what Gary said is totally true. The damage from the lockdown will do much more damage to people than the alleged coronavirus will. People's lives have been stolen from them, says Patricia. Loads of supportive tweets coming on here. Faisal says, Richie, I don't know how businesses that were closed are expected to pay rates for all of that time. Two questions before we get to vaccine passports. What has the government done in terms of asking banks or trying to compel banks to give guys like yourself, Gary, and other business owners a proper break? I mean, do you feel you're getting a fair crack at the whip from your bank?
No, look, we went to the bank in lockdown one when the government sort of went to the banks and said, look, you need to give them mortgage breaks, right? So we went to them and we said, look, we're going to take 3 months. So I took 3 months on the house and I took 3 months on the business. The government then, somewhere along the line, that sort of agreement between government and the banks ran out. I can't remember when it was. And the government basically never went back to the banks and said, listen, you must do this. Now, I'm sure if I rang the banks and said, look, we're closed, they'll be fine. But we haven't done that. Because I'm not getting a break. Although I'm getting a break, it's getting added onto the mortgage. It's just extending it. It's the same with the pandemic payments. It's not free money. My kids are going to have to pay tax on that for years down the road. Like, they're borrowing squadillions, like, so it's not as if it's free money. But I'm sure if I went to the banks about my mortgage and the mortgage on the business and said, look, we're closed, obviously, yada yada yada, we would get the break. But we've enough there to pay them, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, and it would only be deferred. There's a program going out on Channel 4 tonight, Dispatches. Everybody should watch it, even if you're in Ireland and you can access Channel 4. It doesn't specifically deal with Ireland, but it deals with the UK. They've borrowed £400 billion in this country. £400 billion. And the question Dispatches is asking tonight is, who's going to pay it back? Well, the obvious answer is, we're going to have to pay it back.
The people are paying it back. Yeah, of course.
The people. It's insane. Now, it might be the case very soon that the government might say, in Ireland, and I'm sure it's going to happen here as well, listen, we want to open up now. And look, private sector companies, businesses like Gary's, you might want to think about asking to see vaccine passports from customers or clients or members in order to make your place safe and in order to deal with this virus. So I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, Gary, but is that something that you might have no choice but to consider?
None of my members or anybody coming into my gym will not have to show that they've been vaccinated to come in and use my gym. We spent 10 grand after COVID one, after the first lockdown. We bought a temperature monitor at the door. We've 17 sanitizing stations in the place. We have sprays, we've foggers. We spend an absolute fortune to make sure the place is safe. There is none, I think it's 0.003 or something percent of cases that have arisen out of gyms or leisure centers. I hope they don't bring that in, because you know, the vaccines they're talking about, they're not going to make them mandatory, but they are, because in a way, the sound bites that are coming out, that you're going to have the vaccine to get into a restaurant or into a pub or certainly to travel. So, I mean, if you want to do all that, you have to get the vaccine. So in a roundabout way, from what I can hear and see, they're going to make the vaccine mandatory. But no, not in my gym. No way. Absolutely not. I won't be asking anyone to show me that they've been vaccinated. Definitely not. I have a really good core group of clients here who've been absolutely fantastic with us. They know if they don't feel well not to come to the gym. Obviously, you've got the asymptomatic stuff, but we don't have, with all due respect, anyone over the age of 75 training in my gym. So or anything like that. So no, that's not something that I will consider. Now, again, if it's forced upon me, if it comes in as legislation or law or anything like that, well, that's a different story. But no,
you'd prefer not to do it. You'd prefer not to do it.
No, not at all. No, definitely not.
Gary Dempsey is our guest. We've just got a couple of minutes left, Gary. Thanks for coming on today. Huge interest.
Yeah, no problem.
Huge interest in this. About the youngsters, I mean, being a professional footballer, you know, playing at a terrific level, as you did, you've got your own children. What would you say to, you know, parents at the moment who might have a boy or a girl and they might think, Jesus, they're spending a bit too much time on the phone. What do you recommend they do with them? What should they do?
It's hard because, like, my young lads, I'd be a hypocrite because my young lad is on the PlayStation. What can he do? He can't go anywhere. He can't do anything. He's like, I'd love to go and play nine holes with him in the evening. I go out in the back garden. We've got some AstroTurf in the back garden and we play head tennis, but he doesn't want to play with his out lad all the time. He wants to go and meet his friends. Yeah. So for me, giving out advice, it would be a small bit hypocritical, but it's tough. And that's the part of it. Again, that's the part that we don't see. You know, we see the cases, we see the deaths, and we hear all the horror stories. But these are the horror stories that we don't hear, what parents are having to put up with. I was on a podcast last night and we were just talking about some of the stats. Like, suicide rates are up. Domestic abuse is through the roof. Phone calls to mental health helplines and stuff is through the roof. This is the other side of the COVID that they don't seem to want to talk about. And that's when I was saying last night, what about us? What about me? Do we not matter? That's what I'm talking about. Like, I wasn't talking about me and my gym at Matcha Fitness. I'm talking about the coffee shop down the road. I'm talking about the publican around the corner where I want to go and have a couple of beers and watch the match. You know, I'm talking about Lucy's Gymnastics, Jack's Football. Like, it's, you know, it's never ending. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like they've forgotten about us. It's like, protect the elderly, protect the hospitals. Yes, 100%, I agree with that. They've all, as far as I know, are not a million miles away from all them being vaccinated. So can they now, I don't have all the answers, but one of the things I'm having in my head is, can they mind themselves now for a few weeks and sort of let us open? Like, I don't want to open my gym tomorrow morning and let 100 people in. Like, on site at any given time, we could have, Jenny, I don't know, we could have 120, 150 people on site. I'm not allowed to have one tomorrow morning. I can't PT one person. I'm not allowed to have one person in my gym. And it's a 10,500 square foot facility, but a secondary school. And I can't have one person in. Now tell me how that makes sense.
It makes absolutely it makes no sense.
So what I'm saying is, I can facilitate 10 people every hour. So in my gym, we have an app that you use to book in. And I would imagine every other gym in the country is the same. If they haven't got it, they can get it, where I have an hourly slot. So let's say tomorrow morning, you come along, you look at the app and you say, right, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do from 9 o'clock to 9:45. So you and 5 others or 10 others, where I could have like literally 20 meters apart in separate rooms. You can come in, you can jump on the treadmill, do a little blast with some weights, 9:45 gone out the door. I'll come in, me and the staff will come in, clean down all the equipment, next batch of people, 5 or 6 people, whatever it is, might come in at 10 o'clock, do the 45 minutes, out of the house, a little bit of headspace for them, gone, out the door. Do you know what I mean? And we could have that going on all day. Now, whether people want to come to the gym or they don't want to come to the gym, I don't know, but I would like to have that option of opening up and letting in. But like I say, I don't want to go full, because we would have classes on. We would have spinning classes, body pump classes, circuit classes, all that. So we would have a lot of people in around at any given time. But that's not what I want. And I understand I can't go from 0 to 100. But let me go from having nobody and being closed and the business being in trouble to maybe having 5 people in every hour. And then try that for 2 or 3 months, and the council they can designate someone to come and check on us, and if we have more than 5, they can close us down straight away. Do you know what I mean? That sort of, like, why can't we do that?
It's like, you're certainly and you're not the first person I've heard say similar things. You know, you're more than going halfway, you're more than meeting the government halfway.
Yeah.
Gary, I hope against hope, mate, I really do, that something changes. I've got a lot of friends back home as well, and some of them have businesses. And like you, they're tearing their hair out. And like you, they're worried about their children. You can come back anytime you want. Whenever there's any news, mate, come back on and have a chat with me. It's nice to catch up with somebody with the connection with Waterford United and, of course, with WLR FM and Matt Keane. It's been great having you on, despite the subject matter. I do hope that it gets something happens and quickly, and more businesses are inspired by what you said over the weekend and say, yeah, enough is enough now. It's time to get back to work and time to put this behind us. If you have a quick final word, my friend, I'll give you the last 20 seconds, by the way. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Look, it was great. But look, I think there's a change in the tide. I think people have had enough. I think the video, the fact that it's hit so many people. And
we just lost Gary again momentarily. People have... We lost you, Gary, momentarily.
Continue to use my platform to... I'm back, am I?
You're back. Go ahead. Yeah, we lost you for a second. Go ahead then.
Yeah, so I'm going to continue to use my platform to keep speaking for the people, and let's see where we end up.
Lovely to chat, Gary.
I have to say, last thing before I go, the only people that are going to fix it is us, okay? So keep the heads, people, keep the faith, and hopefully, please God, we'll be out of this pretty soon.
Brilliant, Gary. Thanks for your time today, mate. Really appreciate it. Gary Dempsey there, folks.
Not a problem. Thanks.
Great to have you on. Gary played for Waterford United, very successful season with Waterford back in 2001, 2002. Played for Aberdeen, played for Dunfermline, started out at Everton. Really good guy. He has a gym and did a video over the weekend talking about the effects of lockdown on mental health, not only of his children, but on people he knows, and of course on the business. €7,000 the Irish government gave in a rebate on business rates. I think he said that's exactly what he said, didn't he? He said he got €7,000 in a business rate rebate. That's all he's had in 12 months, and a couple of €100 a week furlough payment. That's what the Irish government is doing. There. Right. Okay. Time is coming up fast coming up for 6 o'clock. I'm going to take a tune and I'm very quickly going to open the phone line because it isn't open yet. It'll only take me a minute to do that. If you don't know the contact details by now, you can Skype the program. The way to do that is just look for Chat with Richie on Skype. My Skype handle is Chat with Richie. That's all one word. But you can phone the program as well. It's in the UK 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. Have you got that? The meme, as I said, is on Facebook and it's on my website, richieallen.co.uk. 0161 818 2018. If you're outside the country, it's +44 161 818 2018. That's the one. I didn't mess it up. I can't believe it. Wow. Taking your calls in a moment. Chat with Richie on Skype, all one word. Right, I shouldn't cut Gloria so short, but I'm going to do that anyway because we're only going to 7 o'clock. I'm going to try and take as many calls as I can. If you have called into the programme before, and if you've done that very recently, don't call in today. We have an enormous listenership right across Europe and around the world, and I like that to be reflected in the calls in the phone-in show. Going straight to the phones then, it's Chat with Richie, all one word on Twitter, 0161 818 2018. Is the phone number +44 and all of that if you're outside the UK. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, good evening, Richard. It's Andy Newman calling from Bristol.
How you doing, Andy? It's been a long time, pal. How are you?
I'm pretty well, Richard. I'm pretty well. I've been following the programme pretty religiously over the weeks, and you've done a fantastic job. And what I'd really like to say is that the major problem I have with the current situation is having tried to convince other people that this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't know what the experiences of other callers. Obviously, I'm not going to stay on the line for too long and hog everything, but my feeling is that it's much more easy to fool people than it is to tell them they've been fooled.
Yeah.
You know, all these new things that are coming out now.
Yeah.
There's a new variant every day. You know, they're talking about new variants. When they make up a story, they can carry on and add things to it as they want. You know, and the symptoms of the disease can change. You know, if you've got ingrown toenails, it could be COVID. You know, it's...
And you can't understand why more people haven't said, pull the other one. That's
exactly.
Not...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, my friend. I've already lost a couple of friends over this. And so I no longer try and sort of post things on Facebook or and spread things around and say, this is bullshit. If people want to live in a fascist state, which we're fast becoming, then perhaps they deserve what they're going to get.
You just touched on something very interesting, Andy. Why do you think it is that so many people become very hostile towards their friends when their friends, more often than not, put a very mild bit of information in front of them? Hey, have a look at this, the hospital figures don't add up or something. Why is it that our friends, and I've had this experience, they become very hostile to us? Why?
I think it's down to the media. The media pump this at people 24/7. I don't watch BBC News anymore. In fact, I've not watched BBC News since the Salisbury poisonings, which was another load of rubbish as far as I was concerned at the time. Yeah. And, even the local news, I stopped watching. So consequently, at 6 o'clock, I'm listening to you rather than
watching the news. I tell you what, Andy, that Salisbury story was some laugh, wasn't it? Imagine that. He found a bottle of perfume
and he
thought he would give it to his girlfriend, and it happened to be Novichok. When I heard that, I laughed for about 20 minutes.
I was thinking you couldn't make this up, but somebody has somewhere,
There must be a room, Andy. There's a room. There is. I swear to God, there's a room somewhere. Let's see what these idiots will believe today.
Exactly. I mean, the whole COVID thing has been, let's see what we can push forward.
Yeah.
And if they take it, we'll give them some more bullshit. This is it, exactly. We've been so acquiescent, as David Icke would have said.
Yeah, capitulate.
That we've just accepted everything. Except those of us who know what the situation is and they can see what's coming. That's why I said to you on the tweet earlier on, it's reverse symbolism. If they say we're going to have a lockdown, then we won't. If they say we're not going to have a lockdown, then we will.
Yeah, you made a very good point in your tweet, and it is apparent to me now, and I'm often wrong, and let's hope I am wrong, but I can see this coming late autumn, Andy. I can see this late autumn. I can see them spinning horror stories about a new variant that's just deadly. And sure, let's start wearing the masks again and let's stay indoors again. I can see it happening. I hope I'm wrong, but I can see it happening.
Well, I'm proud to say I've not worn a mask since the whole thing came in, and nor do I intend to. If people ask me why, then I can quietly say to them, well, wearing a mask would inhibit my ability to smell government bullshit.
I'm going to use that.
I think that's the reason I should get it anyway.
Well, do you know what? Wearing a mask is akin to trying to keep mosquitoes out of your living room by using a tennis racket.
It's ridiculous. I'm only going to
the top of the hour, so if you don't mind, I'll move on. It's been a while. It's lovely to catch up with you again, Andy.
Yeah, by all means, Richie, and thanks for everything you do, and loving the Sunday show as well.
Thanks for that, mate. Thanks for the kind words. I really appreciate that. That's Andy there calling us from Bristol. Andy called in a few phone-ins ago. I'll take as many calls as I can, folks. If you are listening to me, try and keep it brief. Try and keep it to a couple of minutes like Andy did there, and we'll crack on. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Claire.
How you doing, Claire? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Belfast.
Ah, you're in Belfast, are you? Belfast girl.
Yeah.
Claire, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it. And, well, the floor is yours. What would you like to say?
Richie, I've been following the stock market for maybe 12 years and, I've lectured in economics for 12 years. And I'm seeing something going on underneath that nobody seems to talk about.
I'm all ears.
There's a problem with the fiat currency, especially the dollar. Now, what happened in September 19, the repo market crashed. And they printed, since that, they printed $700 billion into the market each night. It crashed again on December 19. And then the coronavirus came along in March. Now, the Federal Reserve have printed 21% of all dollars in 2020.
21%, Claire?
21% of all dollars.
Now, can you, as an economist, as somebody who understands what's really going on, can you explain in layperson's or layman's terms what that exactly means? Why is that something that people should know about?
Because, I tell you what, because if the economy was open, Richie, we would see serious inflation. The only way that you can stop inflation is to stop the economy. Now, once the economy goes again, the velocity of money goes straight back up and we're under hyperinflation.
Is that what you see happening in the event these lockdowns go away?
I can see the figures on a daily basis of what's happening and what the Federal Reserve is trying to do and the Bank of England is trying to do to, A, they're going to hyperinflate away the currency and bring in the new system, which is going to be the UBA with the digital currency.
Wow.
This is what's happening, Richie.
So explain...
And people really need to be aware of this.
People need to be aware of it. So they'll hyperinflate the currency away. Explain to our listeners what hyperinflation means. What would it mean now for Mr. and Mrs. Joe Bloggs? What would that mean for them, hyperinflation?
Well, it's seeping through the cracks at the minute. It's seeping through in the likes of copper, wheat, wood, but they do, the central banks, and especially the Federal Reserve, they can't have that seen in food because that shows that your currency is not worth anything. So what will happen if they open up the economy, food prices will, say for example, be up 10% this week, being up another 10% the next week. Hyperinflation just accelerates to the point where the currency, your £10 might be worth £2 in purchasing power.
That could destroy the lives of millions of people, make it basically impossible to live.
Richie, this is why they're going to set up the system that people will be begging for this universal basic income.
Wow, Claire. And can I ask you this? Is this where the idea of debt forgiveness comes in?
This is where the idea for debt forgiveness comes from. They had two choices. They do the debt forgiveness or they inflate away the debt.
You're blowing my mind now.
It looks like they're going for option B, to inflate away the debt.
And you've been looking at this, Claire, now since, I think you said December 2019, you've noticed this.
Well, the problem really happened in 2008 when they bailed out the banks. But here's another thing, Richie. In 2014, the G7, they changed the legislation in 2014 to bank bail-ins, that if the banks crash, which they will do a bank bail-in. Now, bank bail-in is basically, legally, the banks can then take deposits, savings.
Yeah.
Legally, they wipe them out.
And you know, Claire, I think I might have mentioned last year when we were right in the middle of this scamdemic, as some of us call it, Ed Conway, the economics editor for Sky News, who also writes a column in The Times, he was actually advocating that when the debt gets so high that it's impossible to pay back, that there should be a one-off wealth tax on citizens and it should be done. He said it should be done in the middle of the night, didn't he? Do it in the middle of the night so people don't know. Wow.
Yes, and they'll be taking pensions and saying this needs to be used for the debt as well.
See, Claire, if I was the person or persons behind this agenda, that's if you're right, and I suspect you might be right. I think you probably are right. If I was running that agenda, I'd want to get rid of as many old people as I possibly could in the shortest amount of time. No?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this whole vaccine thing is a distraction because there's so many distractions going on. Let's not look at what's going on underneath.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would advise any of your listeners to do is, and you'll see it, even if they followed the price of silver and gold, which was pegged against the currency in 1971, Nixon came off the gold standard in 1971. Since that, we've had a fiat currency backed by nothing.
By nothing.
Just been printing off. So eventually, what's going to happen is it'll have to go back to sound money. which is silver and gold.
Silver and gold.
Bitcoin is another distraction.
We might very well, Claire, have listeners who might be middle-aged. They might be my age, might be in their 40s, late 40s. And some of our listeners might have a couple of grand in the bank. If they're lucky, they might have a couple of more grand in the bank. I read somebody online the other day who shares your point of view, and he said having that money in the bank is potentially disastrous. You shouldn't just leave it there.
Disastrous. The people who are going to be wiped out mostly is the middle class with savings.
With savings.
Yep.
And what about, now people listening to this, they might say, the government has promised to back your savings up to £100,000. The government says it will back your deposits. So if your bank goes belly up, what do you think?
No, what they've said is the insurance will back, the insurance company will back up to £85,000, which you have in the bank.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The economic disaster is going to be that big that the insurance companies are going to go bust.
And the governments will say it's not our fault. Yeah.
No, it's not our fault. And look, in 2013, when it happened in Cyprus, just a small country, and it took 2 years of legal battles for the savers to get. I think it worked out that they got 47% of their savings back. Now you think of that on a massive, massive scale. There's no way any insurance company is going to be able to pay that out.
You're absolutely right. And as I mentioned when I was speaking with Gary in the first hour, our government, Claire, has borrowed the best part of £400 billion so far. Isn't that right?
And nobody talks about it.
No.
Nobody talks about where's this money coming from? How does it work? You know, what does that do for the value of our currency?
I tell you what, Claire, I'd like to get you back on the programme for a longer segment if you fancy it.
Yeah, I could talk for hours about this.
I'm guessing you can, which is why I asked.
I would make your listeners aware of Bitcoin as well.
Now tell us about Bitcoin, because people have been saying to me for years, Bitcoin, I don't like it. Go ahead.
It's done great, but there's a thing called Tether, which it's printed off the back of nothing as well, and that's in for a serious collapse. And I'm even talking this week or next week.
Soon, you mean? So if anybody's got money in that, you're recommending they get it out?
I would get it out. Yeah, and even
Claire is just gone. Wow. I mean, this is, what a fascinating call. I haven't done anything. Now I'm going to see, does the call come back in? I'm still connected to her. Ah, there you are. Thank God. I lost you for a moment there. You just drifted away. You were talking about taking your money out of that. And then
you know, there's so many hardcore Bitcoin people that they don't want to believe that, but I would advise them, take it out, sit on it for a week, because it's going to go down in the next week, and then see what it's like in a week's time, and I guarantee you wouldn't go back into it.
While I'm talking to you now, I'm going to try and make a note of your number. It's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. If I go back in, don't say it on air. If I go back in and try and get it, what will happen is later on, I won't recognise it, because there's been so many people trying to get through. I'm just going to make a very quick note of it now, because I'd like you to come back on, Claire. If we could get you onto Skype so we'd have better sound quality. I'd love to have you back on.
I don't do Skype. No, I don't do Skype, Richie.
I might persuade you to download it, or we'll find another way of doing it anyway. Or we'll do a landline or something. But Claire, that's fascinating. So you see this then, you see the central banks and the Bank of England using this situation to bring about this agenda that we've talked about so often on this programme, that they're going to basically do away with money.
But Richie, this is no cloak and dagger thing. They've no choice.
They've no choice.
They've no choice. It's a 50-year-old problem from 1971. And the fiat currency is coming to an end, and they need to have some other system in place.
Banks are leaving.
And hence the lockdowns. The lockdowns, A, stops the velocity of money, and B, you'll see the riots when people realise that they've lost all their money and the money's not worth anything.
You see, most of us, of course, don't have anything like £85,000 in the bank full stop anyway. Most of us don't have that luxury. But, you know, you might have £5,000 or £6,000. You know, you might have some money saved up for a wedding. You might have money saved up for a child's graduation or for a child's wedding. And all of a sudden you might be told that money is gone. And civil, there will be a civil reaction, Claire, you think?
Oh, absolutely. There's going to be, when people have lost everything, and I mean, even people who have nothing, remember hyperinflation sets in, God knows what a loaf of bread will be at the end of this. When you've lost everything, you've nothing to lose. And you loot.
My friend. And you rent. My friend.
And here's my concern.
Go on.
The police will lose their pensions as well.
Everybody will lose.
Who are they going to be angry too? So who's going to police this?
Do you know, there's a utopian end to all of this, but I can't see it happening. And the utopian end is that when the police and the armed forces realise that we're all in this together, being screwed by an evil agenda, that they'll just say, utopian, let's peacefully just throw these arseholes out of their government buildings on their backsides and be done with them once and for all.
That's where I hope it's going. But unfortunately, we're going to have a lot of hardship.
In the meantime, let me drop you a message, Claire. It won't be more than a day or two, and because I'd love to have you back on. You obviously know what you're talking about with your economics background, and I think people should hear more of you. Thanks for phoning today, by the way.
Thank you, Richie.
Anytime, Claire. Claire in Belfast. Yeah, that we could go on with Claire for ages. I'm well aware of that. A lot of people are trying to call, and I want to do more with Claire on that subject at a time when it'll be. We'll have more time, basically, and I'll persuade her to get a landline or a better phone line, basically, is what I'm saying. It's exactly 21 minutes nearly past 6 o'clock. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show, which is, as always, live from Salford. I'm Richie Allen. Let's go to the phone lines again. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with Julie, Richie.
How you doing, Julie?
I'm all right to you.
I'm not too shabby. We might have spoken ages ago on another phone-in, did we?
No, it was. I messaged you. You messaged me last week to come on the show and said I would. I'm the one's ex-nurse.
Get in there. Well done, Julie. Thanks for coming back.
No worries. Firstly, can I just say, Rich, I've been dead quit. I'm really sorry to hear about your dog.
Thanks for mentioning. Yeah, it's not easy,
no
is it?
No problem.
Not easy. Thanks, Julie. What would you like to say anyway? Go ahead.
I feel times at the moment are very isolating, Richard, to be honest with you. I think because the vast majority don't think like I think, I feel very much like I'm on my own. Because I think it's more than just a virus that we're dealing with. And after today's announcements, I find it really hard knowing which way it's going to go. I do feel we'll get out probably June, July time, and then we'll be back under again. And I just think it's really sad times, to be honest.
You think that come the autumn, it's going to be another variant, and before you know it.
Yes, I do. I think I've felt from day one it was planned straight from day one. I feel they tried it a few years ago with swine flu, so I think it's been planned. I think it's about, you probably think I'm nuts, but I think it's about depopulation.
I don't think you're nuts, Julie. Far from it.
I can see, I've listened to Vernon Coleman right the way throughout, and then obviously started listening to your radio show probably about 9-10 months ago. And you're the only people really, besides certain friends of mine, that are particularly on my wavelength. And I'm just finding it hard. I've just found it frustrating because it's like clap for the nurses. I'm an ex-nurse. And, I think we should be clapping for the hospitality businesses, the hotels, the pubs. They're the people we should be clapping for.
They're on their knees. So tell me about, we've got Julie on the line. Tell me about being an ex-nurse for a minute, if you don't mind. We learned recently, or I learned from doing a very, very, very simple bit of research, that the NHS has lost 50% of its staff in the last 30 years. When you were working as a nurse, did you notice that, Julie?
I started in 1984 at Willenshaw Hospital in Manchester as a trainee, and it was pretty bad then, if I'm honest. They were shutting wards down, knocking places down then. But there was more togetherness then. There was one matron for the whole of the hospital. It was a fantastic job, Bridget, to be honest. I had 26 good years, but then had to come out because of cancer. And they worked very hard. I'm not calling the NHS in any shape or form, but yes, they've lost a lot of nurses. They've lost beds due to this pandemic as well. They've had to take beds out, haven't they, because of social distancing as well. I just feel down. I just feel down with it all. I'm glad I'm not in the profession now. And that's it really. But I do think there's more than just a virus that we're dealing with here. And I thought this since last March.
And every winter, and just before we talk about what you came on to talk about, which is the isolation of knowing this stuff, which Andy touched on from Bristol. We'll come back to that in a second. But when you were working in the hospital in Withenshaw, I suppose every winter it was full pelt, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if I remember rightly, you're talking probably 10 years ago, there was a story that came out of Stepping Hill, where they had dead patients on the mortuary floors because enough room for them. And there was patients that were in A&E on stretchers for 2 or 3 days that couldn't get beds. So this is nothing, for this time of year, from October, November through to February, this is nothing unusual. Saw it all the time. My husband was a porter as well, and he said stories when he was a porter in the early 90s. So nothing's new at all.
It's not new.
You know,
Far less nurses now. And every winter, as has been proven, every winter the UK newspapers are filled with front page stories about how dreadful things are. Go back to Julie while we have you, and I am getting a lot of calls, so I'm going to move them along quickly. But tell
not a problem.
No, it's important that you say this because Andy got into this earlier on. This sense of isolation, knowing that something is very wrong, and everybody else seems to be. And it really is everybody else seems to be just going along with it and happy to go along with it.
Everyone's very accepting of it all. And that's what I find really hard because I'm thinking, is there something wrong with me? Because I'm not agreeing with the clapping and I'm not agreeing with I don't agree with lockdown and I don't agree with vaccination being for. I mean, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I've had every vaccine under the sun for my job. But this, I feel, has been pushed on me. I'm fit. I feel I'm fit. I feel I'm healthy, you know, and I do the best I can to keep myself going. And I think, well, why should I have a vaccine pushed on me?
Were you offered it, Julie?
I've not been offered it yet because I'm only like 56, just 56.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, I'm not that far off, probably about April or May time. But I will be refusing it, almost certainly. And vaccination passports, if that comes in again, I don't agree with that either.
Imagine, Julie, if, because I'm with you, I have no intention of having it. Imagine it gets to the stage where not having it would prevent you from going out for a drink or a meal or to the cinema. I mean, what would we do then?
This is the hardest bit. This is the hardest bit, but this is the way it's going, isn't it? But I'd be quite happy. I mean, we go abroad twice a year normally. But I mean, I'd be quite happy to have a test, pay for a test to get abroad. But I mean, if you look at Germany, Richie, there's at least 40% of the population that don't want it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're very unhappy about it.
And apparently a third of younger people in this country, and that's not BAME people or ethnic minorities. A third of all young people in this country, it is believed when they are offered the jab, they're going to say no as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's like the masks, they've brought the masks, they're saying about masks now, about the kids wearing masks in school.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
It's crazy.
It's just not adding up. It's just not right.
You're not alone, Julie. You're not alone. While it seems that everybody is going along with it, we know from, you know, the contacts we get on programs like this, there are other programs that have, you know, big followings. A lot of people are aware of it and,
I've followed people that think like I think, like Dolores Cahill.
Yeah.
I follow
yeah.
her as well. You know, I've read quite a few books and stuff like that. So I do follow the right channels, but still doesn't stop you make you feel isolated because everyone's jumping up and down that they've got to be freed by July. And yeah. I'm thinking, well, we should never all be in lockdown this sense of time anyway.
No. We had it last year. Last year they released some of these restrictions for the summer and everybody thought happy days. But we knew, people like you and people like me, we knew it would come in again in the winter, which it did. And anyway, Julie, I'm going to move on and take some more calls if you don't mind.
Thanks ever so much for speaking to me, Richie.
Not at all. My pleasure.
I appreciate everything you do. Thanks very much.
Not at all, Julie. And thanks for the kind words about jazz. I really appreciate that. Julie on the line there, who worked once as a nurse in Withenshaw. Now, Ryan has tried to get in touch with this programme several times during previous phone-ins, and he's reached out to me tonight on Skype, so we'll say hello to Ryan, who's there now. Hey, Ryan, you're very welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm okay, Richie. It's Ryan. I'm calling from Colchester.
Lovely to meet you, my friend, and sorry you didn't manage to get on in the past, but hey, better late than never. You're here now.
I've been trying to get on for ages, but because I listen on Podomatic, I never know when you're on.
Ah, you see, you're listening to the on-demand then. Yeah, of course. But no, I'm glad you're...
I always catch you on Podomatic, and I really love your shows. You know, it's such a great thing to listen to in these sort of dark times we're going through, you know.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that, but more importantly, thanks for listening, full stop. Thanks for being there. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes because we're getting hammered with calls, Ryan, so the floor is yours. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm just really talking, really, my sort of point of interest really is all about this 5G and, you know, the devastating effects it's going to have on human health and everything. I'm particularly coming from the perspective of somebody who is electrosensitive.
All right.
And has really struggled for the last 15, 16 years with all the masks that are around, and, you know, had sort of friends of mine that have committed suicide and all sorts of stuff. You know, it's been a real struggle for people with electrosensitivity.
Ryan, I'm really sorry your friends went through that. I genuinely am. I want to ask you to explain to our listeners what electro hypersensitivity is. Explain it to them, my friend. What does it mean? What does it mean to suffer with that?
Well, it means a sort of a reaction to people have reactions. Mainly, a lot of people have having real problems with dealing with the massive amount of electromagnetic radiation. You know, we're now exposed to over 1 billion times more radiation than we were 30 years ago. And a lot of people's nervous systems, particularly people with electro-hypersensitivity, just cannot cope with the amount of radiation. And people have headaches and blackouts and all sorts of things, you know. I'm not trying to get sympathy. I'm just trying to explain the story, you know.
Absolutely on board with it. I've met people over the years who have and are suffering with it. And they've said to me many times the most difficult thing in terms of dealing with it, suffering it, is that, of course, everybody, not everybody, but of course the media will say, and other people will say, and the medical profession will say that it's not real, that it's a figment of your imagination. But I don't believe that for a minute.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the BBC are just... Oh, dear. The BBC, they've got this, just as an example, the BBC had this, they've got this technology program called Click, which looks at technology once a week. And they had something on about 5G. And they had one woman who was a protester who was anti-5G on one side. And they had two scientists from the other side that were backing up 5G. And it was really... The BBC, it really obscured.
Very unbalanced.
They really made the woman look bad, you know, that was the protester.
And if they wanted to, the BBC could quite easily find a scientist from, an academic institution, a well-known academic
Absolutely,
institution,
yeah.
If they wanted to. But this is what the BBC does. So it gets two scientists to say that EMF radiation is fine, nothing to worry about. Yeah. And they get a lady who might be intelligent, she might be, but of course...
Yeah, she sounded quite intelligent, but the thing... scientist option in the BBC. They skewer the argument, you know.
Yeah, of course they do. And you're very concerned about 5G. Now, what do you know about 5G towers in your area in Colchester then?
Well, there is one gone up about 3 miles down the road. Most of the 5G is not actually operating on the higher 60 gigahertz frequency. Most of the 5G is in the medium to low bands, which is 2 gigahertz to 6 gigahertz.
Now, what does that mean, Ryan?
Well, that means that the actual frequency, the 2 to 6 gigahertz, it travels further. The actual higher frequency of 60 gigahertz doesn't actually travel very far. So the 60 gigahertz frequency, from my understanding, is they need a lot more towers. And this is where they have them on all the lampposts, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you, yeah.
So that's my kind of understanding. I've studied this subject so much over the last 15 years. I know so much about how the towers work and how the phones work and everything like that. You know, it's...
And you know, discussion of it seems to have taken a back seat to discussion of coronavirus restrictions and measures and stuff.
Yeah. Well, David Icke's been talking a bit about 5G. I do try and listen to the David Icke Dot Connector once a week. It normally comes out on a Friday, and that's normally quite good, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had Barry Trower on.
What's the other guy down in Devon, Totnes? What's his name?
No, that would be God. My memory's gone. Absolutely. Oh, God. It's Mark, isn't it? It's not Mark. No, I know who you're speaking of.
There's another chap in Gates.
Yeah, I must invite him on again.
Mark Steele, that's the one.
And it's undoubtedly going to harm people. Chris Busby is the name I was trying to think of. Chris has been an authoritative voice on this subject, and he's convinced that it will do great harm to the population. To the wider population. Yeah.
Our only sort of hope and light at the end of the tunnel is the Michael Mansfield QC, who's now got together £130,000 to take on Public Health England in a landmark legal case, you know?
Yeah. He's been on the programme before. I must invite him back on. What I'm going to do, Ron, I'm going to move on very quickly. I'll give you another 20 seconds, mate. Go ahead.
Can I be a bit cheeky and give a link out? Would that be okay?
Of course it would be okay. Go ahead.
Okay then, mate. Just to all your listeners, if you'd like to support the crowdfunding Michael Mansfield, the link is crowdjustice.com/case/legal-action-against 5G.
I'll look that up and I'll tweet it out. Michael Mansfield has been on this programme in the past.
Oh, has he? I didn't realise that. Yeah. Yeah, he's a very distinguished lawyer.
He really is,
for me, he's the light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Lovely to meet you, Ryan. Thanks for calling in, mate.
Love your show, Richie, and just carry on. Please don't give up, mate.
Not at all.
You're such a fantastic broadcaster, the best out there.
I owe you a fiver now. I'll have to send it. I'll have to find a way of getting it to you. Ryan, thanks, mate. And good luck with the electrosensitivity, mate. You have my sympathy. Thanks for coming on.
Then, mate. Take care then.
Lovely. You too. Ryan from Colchester there. It's the phone in on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 22 minutes or 21 minutes or something like that to 7 o'clock. Monday's programme, February 22nd. Do stay in touch with richieallen.co.uk. My website, you'll find on that website articles uploaded there daily. Some of them good, some of them dreadful maybe. I don't know. But have a look and you make your own mind up. richieallen.co.uk. Let's stay with the phones. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hiya, it's Charlie Stevens.
How you do? Charlie, how are you? I know you from Twitter, of course.
You do indeed, yes. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I was sort of a bit taken aback by the announcement today with the schools and requiring children to wear face masks. And that just kind of prompted me to phone in. I wouldn't normally phone in. I'd normally be too chicken.
There's no need to be chicken, mate. You know that. So secondary school students will need to be tested twice a week by their parents. That's bad enough. But masks.
Yeah.
What has been the proposal regarding masks? Are they asking kids to wear masks in corridors or in classrooms or what?
It's in classrooms. It's for pretty much the whole day. So, yeah. You know, 6 hours at school, your child's going to be sitting there with a mask on, and that's secondary school as well. So,
is that exclusively secondary school now, or is it also relevant for primary school children?
It's exclusively secondary school.
Yeah. Wow.
And for me, it's mad because they don't, you know, enforce it in offices or anything like that. You know, so why are the kids being forced to do this? And for me, I've looked it up. I think it's actually a breach of Article 8 of the Human Rights Act, I think the government have overreached this time. I think there's going to be backlash on this one. I think this could actually sort of spark the, you know, change of mood in the general sort of public. You know, I know that you've got this sort of Overton window of people that sort of believe what's in the mainstream media, what the BBC are putting out. But I think, you know, this is now coming into people's living rooms for their TV. Your child's got to wear a mask. And, you know, if that doesn't wake people up, I don't know what will.
And you think it will, Charlie? You think enough parents might be aghast, horrified at this to do something about it?
Yeah, I do. I think because, you know, there's been articles in the papers talking about the psychological impact of wearing masks and, you know, these are developmental brains being starved of oxygen. It's going to have an impact. It's obvious. So I just hope and pray. But, you know, out of the two of us, me and my wife's normally the level-headed one, but she's in pieces. I'm the one that's sort of, you know, reassuring her, I'll deal with the school, I'll take it on.
Yeah, that was my next question, Charlie, was, have you got your own teenage children or nephews or nieces? But you obviously have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've got four kids and two of them are secondary school age. So, yeah, it's going to be a big impact. But then again, there's the other thing my wife was saying. Well, if you send them to school with a note saying you don't have to wear a mask and all their classmates are wearing a mask, then you'll have a kind of enforced mask apartheid in the classroom with the kids, you know, peer pressure, and you know what kids are like.
Yeah.
They'll be getting it from that angle as well. So, you know, I just don't think the government have thought this through at all. But they just seem to sort of make things up. You know, £10,000 fine because you went on holiday and didn't fill a form, you know, fill a form out correctly or whatever. They just don't stay in their lane. You know, the laws are supposed to be brought in and put through Parliament and voted on, and there's a process for it.
Yeah.
But they're making it up now.
Yeah, the statutory instruments that they've put in place gives Matt Hancock the ability to announce something as law, and Parliament doesn't get to see it for a couple of days. It doesn't get to debate on it. It's just asked to nod it through or to say no. It inevitably says yes. It inevitably nods it through. It's astonishing. I heard a human rights, not a human rights, I heard a constitutional. I heard a lawyer who's familiar with parliamentary procedure speaking on either BBC Radio 4 or 5 earlier, and he said it's just astonishing. It's basically government by diktat now, Charlie.
It is. It absolutely is. But I just don't know quite where it's going. But one of the things I think now, there's a line drawn in the sand. It's June the 21st, I think it is, when they're saying we're going to lift all the restrictions.
Yeah.
Now, you, me, the listeners to your show will be kind of one step ahead of the game saying, right, okay, that's the Overton window, but we're, you know, we're plus 1 month ahead of that because we see what's coming. We see that there'll be a new variant or some stroke that they will pull. And, you know, this time next winter we'll be in the same situation. But I think we're going to get to a point where the government are staring down the public and, you know, we're looking each other in the whites of the eyes. The government are saying, right, okay.
Who's going to blink first? Yeah.
Who's going to blink first? There is a hidden agenda. There is something here, you know. And we hear Boris with his, you know, his globalist tropes, build back better and stuff like that. There's definitely something bubbling beneath the surface that they're not showing us. But I think at some point the mask's going to slip and the population are going to realise, uh-oh, our government aren't who we think they are.
I hope you're right, Charlie. That's a lovely positive thing to say, mate. I really do. I'm going to take another call. I'm really glad you phoned in, by the way. I do read, I see your tweets a lot during the programme. You've always got something interesting to say, mate. So thanks for that. I really appreciate it.
It's a great job that you do, and I really enjoy your show.
Thanks, mate. And regards to your missus, tell her not to worry too much. I think you're right. The law is on your side, I think. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cheers, Charlie. Right. Not at all. Charlie Stevenson is a lovely bloke who tweets the programme fairly regularly. It's the first time that he and I have ever spoken. Lovely to have him on the programme today. It's, you know, the Twitter handle by now. It's BBG Richie if you want to tweet me. If you want to phone the programme, it's 0161 818 2018. That's inside the UK. Plus 44161 818 2018 if you're calling from outside the UK. And my Skype name is Chat with Richie. Back to the phones again. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Hey, Richie, this is Eric in Gloucester. Hey, this is Eric in Gloucester. You got me?
Welcome back, Eric. It's been a long time, pal. How are you?
I'm well. I'm really well, man. I'm doing great because I get to listen to you as much as I get to listen to you, brother. It's excellent.
You're very
kind.
Thank
you for everything you do.
You're very kind, Eric. You're very kind for saying that. We've got about 3 minutes because I've got loads of calls coming in. So tell us what you came to say, my friend.
Well, I guess it's building consensus. Just like you've been saying, it's so shocking how many businesses have not banded together and created counter-economic communities to sort of push back against this. If something does not make sense so clearly as these restrictions and measures do globally, there has to be something that's tying everything together. And for people to deny that at this point and throw the pejorative of the conspiracy theory around is just willful ignorance. And I find it deeply offensive to the human spirit that people are willing to, for what, just belonging or feeling part of the larger group, that no one, at least here in Gloucester, very few people are actively pushing back. People are just acquiescing. It shocks me how servile people have become.
What about what Charlie said a moment ago? Are we reaching some sort of a Rubicon? Is it getting to the stage, you know, asking children to wear masks in the classroom when there's no need for it? Eric, do you think something like that might spark some sort of a resistance or a pushback from the people?
I would hope so, but from my experience, in the larger population, of course, we all have our friends that we socialize with and work with. They all pretty much are on the same page, but the larger percentage of people that are not part of our groups really seem to be the majority of people that those are the people I'm having the hardest time reaching. You know, there are various, like the lumberyard, I'll walk into the lumberyard and not cover my face. Like, that's okay. I go to the food store that I frequent, and it's painful. I walk in there and it's like I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but no, I'm not gonna cover my face for no reason.
Yeah.
It would be different if this was a much larger, much more deadly scenario, and for people to not grasp this issue and disconnect from it with their own cognitive dissonance, their own hang-ups, their own fears. I don't want to detract from anyone's fears or health issues or family one's health issues. But at the larger point, like your first guest was saying, 95% of the people, it barely touches them. And to have all these business owners just continually go along with this. My ex owns a food store. She was reported to the Attorney General of Massachusetts for refusing to comply with the mask mandate. I mean, there's a reason why she's my ex. I'll be the first thing I'll say. But that being said, she is a hard person. She is not going to cover her face if it is completely unnecessary. And for her, I give her a lot of credit, you know, to stand up against it. It shocks me that most people don't and won't. And I want to, again, encourage you and thank you, as I'm sure many of your listeners feel the same way. Without outlets like your show, other shows, especially James Corbett, especially putting together his well-done content, you know, it gives us a little bit more motivation and energy to continue to be ourselves, to stay strong in ourselves, and to push back when it's appropriate. Without people like you, Richie, we'd all be very, very, very much more fooked, as they say, right?
Mate, it's great to hear from you again, Eric, in Gloucester there in Massachusetts. Thanks for phoning in. I really appreciate it. And
when it,
yes, mate, go
when
ahead.
It all, when it all ends up, when it all ends up and it's time to travel again, either I'll come to Manchester, man, or you come to Gloucester. But at some point, we're definitely having beers, brother.
Oh, I'd love to go back to Gloucester. Oh, yeah. I'd be there in a heartbeat, Eric. Thanks, mate. Thanks for the call. Lovely to speak to you. Have a great rest of your day. Eric in Gloucester in Massachusetts there. It's a great place. I visited it back in 2002. So I did. I've probably got maybe time for one, maybe two more calls. Let's see. Back to the phones then. Caller, welcome to the program. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, it's Diane.
Is it Diane?
Diane, yeah.
Diane, welcome to the program. How are you? Where are you calling from?
Liverpool.
Are you in Liverpool, just around the corner? Have we spoken before?
No, we haven't.
Oh, we haven't. First time. You're very welcome, Diane. It's over to you now. What would you like to say?
It's about this roadmap to recovery, apparently. I don't believe it.
You don't
buy it? I don't believe it at all.
Why
no, I don't think it's going to end. I think it's going to go on and on and on.
Why do you think that?
Because they're all lies. They're all telling lies. They've been telling us lies from the beginning. I haven't believed a word that's come out of their mouths.
They told
not
us,
one word.
Yeah, they told us last summer, didn't they? Oh, we're opening up again now and eat out to help out and everything is hunky-dory. But once we got into the winter, it was locked down again and again and again. Yeah.
Yeah. All this rubbish now on the television, you know, we've got such a month to, where we can have six people again and all this rubbish, you know. I just sit there and, I mean, sometimes I look and I listen and I can't believe what I'm hearing, Richie. I just can't believe it. And I can't believe that people believe what is coming out of the mouths of these people who are supposedly our government.
Do you pinch yourself like I do? I've actually done that. I'm not joking. I've actually pinched myself on occasion.
Yeah.
And I this can't be happening. Surely they don't think we're that stupid. But apparently they do, Diane.
I think they do. But, you know, I mean, I can understand a lot of people are probably frightened, you know, like the older people, the elderly. They've been scared witless. You know, I've got family and my dad, he's not that type of person. It doesn't bother him. He's not scared. But my stepmom is. She's terrified, absolutely terrified. And she believes everything she hears on the news, everything that's said. They've had the jabs, the two of them.
And they're okay, thankfully.
Well, yeah. I mean, I work in the care sector. And I have a few clients who've had the jabs. And they've all took ill. And one of them actually, bless her, she was 94. And she did have health problems, obviously, at that age. But she had the jab. And then the following week, she took so ill, she went into hospital with pneumonia. And she didn't come out. And sadly, she's passed away.
94. And she was given the vaccine. Her health wasn't great anyway.
No.
But you wonder about that. You wonder about the common sense about giving her the vaccine. Did she need to get the vaccine?
Well,
that's the question, isn't it?
She did, no. Apparently, I did hear she had a phone call. And I think one of the other ladies, because there's a group of us that have always gone to her through there. I've been seeing her for near on 18 months. And she had a phone call from the doctor saying about the jab, and the phone was handed to her and she agreed to it. I mean, she was compos mentis, you know, she did understand, you know, she didn't have dementia or anything. But what shocked me was when she took ill and we rang the ambulance and they took her into hospital, we found out later on that none of her family knew that she'd had the jab.
The family didn't know that she'd had the vaccine.
No, they didn't know.
Might the care home have assumed that because the government had announced that everybody over 75 would get the vaccine, maybe they assumed that the family would just accept it as a given, maybe, Diane?
Well, she wasn't in a care home, Richie. She was in her own home.
Ah, she was being cared for in her own home. Right, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think the family would have been told then?
Well, I would assume so, because, I mean, you know, I got this, like, from somebody who's in the know, and they just said that the family said they didn't know that she'd had the jab. What their feelings on it were, I don't know. I don't know what their feelings were, but they said that they didn't know she'd had it.
And the point is, a week after, was it a week? A week later, she was in hospital with pneumonia, and she didn't recover.
She was going downhill anyway, to a certain extent. Her appetite was always fine. You know, she enjoyed her food. Her mobility wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Her mobility wasn't
But was there was there any was there any type of pneumonia symptoms before she got the jab?
No.
There wasn't?
No.
Well, fair play to you, Diane, because you could blame the vaccine, but you're not doing that because we don't know. That's the thing. But we don't. But we should know, though. But we should know. Somebody should be looking into that. Shouldn't they?
We don't know, but you have your suspicions, don't you, Richie?
Yeah,
sometimes.
You
know when when you get to know somebody for so long, like I've known her, and then all of a sudden she takes this bad turn. I mean, she'd been in and out of hospital before with falls and things like that, and she'd always come home and, you know, resumed, carried on the way she was before. But this time she went really downhill.
And the point is, really? Diane, the point is nobody in this country is looking into because we saw this in Basingstoke when 22 people died in a care home in Basingstoke. Nobody is checking. They're just saying it's a coincidence, or, you know, they're saying, well, it must be coronavirus. Then the coronavirus, we must have had a wave of cases. But again, it's an amazing coincidence. Just after you vaccinate a care home, it's an amazing coincidence that 22 people die. And nobody is going to do autopsies or toxicology tests on these people. That's wrong.
That's true.
That's wrong,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, that's true. But why are they not doing that?
Yeah.
What is the reason for it? You know, I mean, I thought that would be a given.
No.
But they're not.
They're not performing autopsies on people that have been listed as having died with coronavirus. They're not getting autopsies.
Mm. So that raises your spidey senses, doesn't it?
Yeah, spidey senses is right, Diane. To put it mildly, yeah. Listen, we're just about out of time. I'm going to have to close out the programme. I'm glad you rang up and told us that. And
okay.
Before you go, Diane, in terms of, you know, your own work, are you, I mean, you come into contact then with people like the lady whom you mentioned. You're coming into contact with a lot of people like that?
Yes.
And they've had the vaccine, most of them?
Most of them have, yeah.
So you're watching it closely, eh?
Yeah, and I've got a few relatives who work in the NHS, and there's one actually who goes out and about on the district. And there was one lady that she was seeing. She was very hesitant about having the jab, but her daughter talked her into it. And the relative told me that she had it, and the lady got rushed into hospital.
Did she survive?
She did. She did.
But she had a serious reaction, seemingly.
Serious reaction, yeah.
Diane, thanks for phoning in and sharing that with us today. I really appreciate that. You've no idea. Thank you.
Oh, no. Oh, and before you go, I'm sorry to hear about your little doggy.
Thanks very much. You're a dog lover yourself then, Diane, by the sounds of it.
Oh, yeah, we've got a little doggy, Milo, yeah. He's lovely.
So you know the trials and tribulations of dogs.
Yeah. Lovely. Well, he's a pup. He's a pup like your little one, so you can imagine.
Well, I hope you have years and years of happiness with him, Diane. Thanks for phoning in today. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks for that. And bye for now. That was Diane from Liverpool. And that pretty much closes out today's programme. If one or two of you, by the way, had one or two sound issues, I've had one or two sound issues myself here. I'll get on top of that and deal with that overnight. In the meantime, thanks so much to Gary Dempsey for coming on the programme in hour one. And thanks to all our callers today. I really appreciate the fact that you would call in and share your time and your opinions with me. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. And we'll do it all again tomorrow, Tuesday at 5 o'clock UK time. Until then, bye now.